Ladies and gentlemen, podcasting since 2005, you're listening to Gamertag Radio with your host, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
Welcome to Gamertag Radio, episode 858. This is your host, Danny, speaking here, and also co-host of the show, we have Pete. What's going on, Pete?
Good morning, dude. It's been a long time, man. It's been a minute since the two of us. What was it? The last time it was just you and I. We had that daily conversation about Apex Legends.
Yes. That was, oh my God, that was when I was in Phoenix, I think.
Were you?
I'm trying to remember. I released it during the trip.
Yeah.
That I remember. Yeah. That was a couple of weeks ago. Yeah man. How's everything, man?
Doing well. It's been a really good, relaxing weekend. No video game, surprisingly. I mean, I played Friday night, but I mean, yesterday me and the wife took off and we just did husband and wife stuff, right? Took some, went out to the beach, went out to this thing called Blowing Rocks. It's like a big, because it's Florida. We're flat, right? Or there's no quote unquote cliffs. But there's these rock formations that have been battered over the years with waves and stuff like that. And so they have these cool shapes and stuff. And then we went out to dinner, we went out to a special breakfast, and it's just really dope, relaxing weekend. And my wife had me join her for her exercise. It's this thing called Extend Bar. It's kind of like yoga meets ballet. And I did it just, because, I was going to go to the gym and I was like, I'm going to try it out. Let me try out what she does. And yo, I woke up this morning. That hurts, dude. Things hurt that aren't supposed to hurt. So, I have a total newfound respect for the workouts and exercises that she's doing. So, shout out to her and shout out to my sore muscles.
Awesome, man. Well, Paris is not going to be joining us for this roundtable, but we have an interview today with the developers at Massive to talk about the Division 2 AI. We're going to post that on the podcast, so stay tuned. All right, so head over to GamertagRadio.com, post your comments and feedback. You could also search for us on any podcast app and just search Gamertag Radio. And once you find it, subscribe, follow, post a review. It will help us out big time, man.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
All right, so in this episode, we have fan mail. We also going to give a lot of shout outs today, man, for people that have been donating. Because we're trying to get money for E3. The E3 is coming up in a couple months. And yeah, budget. We need a budget, man, because we're struggling right now. So if you guys can help us out, please head over to donate.gamertagradio.com. That's donate.gamertagradio.com. And yeah, we'll be there, man. Hopefully at E3 if we get the help from the community. So later on, we're going to talk about that because we have a lot of first-time, long-time listeners, first-time donating for GTR. So that's very, very cool to see, man. So, P, anything about that before we continue with the show?
No. I think you said it best. The way we do it, it's not required. It's not necessary, but it's always appreciated, whether it's via donations, whether it's via subscription. Whether you're using your Twitch Prime on the show, anything helps. What we do here on the Gamertag Radio Show is, it's a passion project for all of us, right? Three of us, we do this because we have this love for podcasting and video games. And, there's times where, yes, we have to play ads, and there's times where we don't have any ads, but we need the help and the support in order to do this and make this show better. There's no way that this show would look as good or sound as good if it wasn't for the support that we've gotten from our fans. Hell, I would have gotten a TwitchCon last year if it wasn't as a direct result of the help we got from our fans and our listeners. So anything you guys can do, We appreciate it. It's not necessary, but you know, we do say thank you and we love you guys more and more as a result. So yep. With that being said, let's get on. Let's do this.
All right. So at the end of the show, we're going to mention shout outs, everything, people that have been donating. So stay tuned. All right. So we're going to go with fan mail.
Fan mail at gamertagradio.com.
All right, Pete, we have a couple voicemails here, voicemail messages, also emails, and I believe Discord messages. So which one you want to go first?
Do I do the infamous fan mail?
Nah, it's okay. You should retire that.
No.
Fan mail. Oh, there you go. All right. I guess it's not retired yet.
No, I'm not retiring that.
Right. So let's play with voicemails first.
All right, let's do the first voicemail. Here we go.
All right.
Hey, this is Eric. Sorry, I got disconnected last time. But I just had a question for you guys. I'm not sure if anybody's ever asked this before, but I wanted to know what your guys' thoughts were on how games are released now. With the consoles now having the ability to patch and change aspects of the games, do you think that some companies rely on that too much and rush games that aren't ready? Just wanted to know what your guys' thoughts were. Thanks, and keep up the good work.
All right, thanks for calling in. Do we think companies rush games out? I don't think, me personally, that developers / publishers release games with the express consent to push them out early unfinished, right? I do think that there are some that may be a little more negligent with regards to their QA process, and so games do get released prematurely, whether it's as a requirement to satisfy stockholders or the business, they have a specific target that they want to hit. But you know, no developer wants to put out a rush job. Right? I can't imagine, you know, just being a professional in any industry that you want to put out a half-assed job, right? I don't think we as people want to put out something with our names attached, that would be considered, you know, either whether it be half-assed or, you know, of low quality, right? That being said, there, you know, and I don't know if I would put that onus on the developer. I think maybe I would put that onus on the publisher versus, you know, more so than anything else, right? I mean, we've seen how games such as, you know, we'll go back to Titanfall 2. Phenomenal game, you know, very, very well done. Amazing story, the gameplay mechanics, everything, but it was released or published at the bad time, right? There's games we saw, Apex, you know, Anthem most recently, you know, not 100% well done. See, my dog even agrees.
I
agree 100% right. You know, Anthem just not ready for prime time yet. Another 6 to 8 months, maybe it needs another 10 to 12 months to bake in the oven, you know, get all the marinated juices flowing and cook to a golden brown. And who knows, maybe had that game come out in a year, we wouldn't, you know, the game wouldn't be going through the stumbling blocks, you know, that it's currently going through. Not to say that people aren't enjoying it. Just saying that for the majority of people, the vocal minority or the vocal majority at this point, yeah, they have a problem with the way the game is performing. And that is one of the things that I guess would support that argument of, oh my God, yeah, they released it too early or whatnot. That being said, I don't know. I think that no developer or no professional in the gaming industry wants to put out a subpar product. But, you know, there's times where either project managing either goes awry, there's poor communication either to the from the developer to the publisher, or maybe the publisher or the developer just aren't listening to what's being said. Maybe they need, you know, maybe they need to have having their ear to the road, being able to, you know, listen to the community and understand the complaints and the gripes. Mm-hmm. But I don't think they do it on purpose.
No. I remember this from years ago. This is, I can't remember exactly what year it was, but Pete went to Canada. I don't know if it was Montreal, Vancouver. Can't remember exactly.
Montreal. If you're talking about Army of Two?
Army of Two, yes. Yeah. What year was that? Do you remember?
Oh, my God. That'd have to be 08, 09, maybe.
Okay. So, oh, my God. A decade ago. Whew. So, Pete was there at the Army of Two community event. And the influencers that were there gave feedback to the developers. And the developers decided to delay the game based on the feedback that everybody gave them during that event. Am I correct, Pete?
I'm trying to think. It might have been 08. Yeah, I think it was 09. Because I don't recall if it was the first one or the second one that we went for. But yeah, I mean, as a direct result of them, of the feedback that we provided early on at the community events, they thought about it and they said, you know, it's just not ready for prime time. They pushed it back, I want to say 6 months before they released it to the public. Other instances where we saw things like that, where they were actually listening to gamers, was EA's Medal of Honor. The most recent one, the last one actually in the series, you know, they brought out a whole host of folks from the gaming community, myself, you know, Lady Luck, Mandy was there, you know, was there as part of that. We brought other player, you know, other people from other parts of the first person or third person shooter, you know, community. I think it was MP First was out there, Drifter, just, you know, and those were way before like the influencers on YouTube, but like people like Drifter Swifter on YouTube. He was out there. And we all sat with the developers and went through like a whole week of playing the game, talking with developers, having them fix the code, come back. That is what we really need, especially in this day and age, is to have, and not to say that maybe the QA folks are not the ones to be testing it, because they're the ones that are bumping their characters into walls repeatedly to see if there's, you know, a break or something, or a glitch. But folks who have tendencies towards that particular genre, I think having that type of perspective and having that type of criticism go back directly to the developers and have them work on it and come back, and then you test it to see if that works. For example, that Medal of Honor event was like a labor of love. I would say by the end of the week, we were all sick of the game because we kept playing over like two or three maps. But when you start going through maps repeatedly, you play the game for an hour and a half, you talk to the developers, they play with their code, you know, like, and that's basically what we did for a whole week. We, you know, we the morning session, we would talk to the developers about what they did the night before, what they fixed. We played the game, you know, with no intent to go against what we did the week before. We just played the game naturally, right? It was, you know, it was two team, it was squad based matchups, and it was like, okay, we did the, you know, we're playing the game. And then after about an hour or 2 hours of gameplay, we would go back for an hour and a half, 2 hours, and have a, you know, a sit down with the developers and talk about weapon balance and map design, and et cetera. And then we would go to lunch. They would work on code. They would come back and we'd do it again for another, you know, 3-4 hours. And then we would go to dinner. They would work overnight to fix the code. That is an integral part of game testing and what should be done. And it doesn't just have to be with, you know, with shooter games. It could be done with platformers, you know. And I understand those two titles that I just spoke about, with Army of Two or with Medal of Honor, those were, you know, big name franchise titles. So,
and both from EA.
Yeah. Well, they had a budget to be able to support that, but not everybody is available. Not every developer or publisher can provide that. You've got smaller indie developers that may not have the budget to be able to fly out influencers or dedicated hardcore community members who are passionate about those type of games to be able to provide that feedback. So you have to make do with what you have, but it's an integral part. And if you're not listening to, whether it's your community or you're not listening to your QA folks correctly, then you're going to have a problem with your title. And unfortunately, I think we saw that what's happening most recently with Anthem.
All right. So we have another email here. This is from Jonathan. He said, so with Cuphead and potentially Ori and the Blind Forest possibly coming to the Switch, what do you think of the chances of Zelda and Mario coming to Xbox? As of right now, I'll say no, that's crazy. But honestly, who knows what could happen, man. At this point, like, whoever thought an Xbox game was going to be available on the Switch, you know, so years back. So you never know. Maybe Nintendo will make changes, you know, in the future. But as of right now, I'll say it is crazy, but you never know. Pete, you agree or what?
I mean, yeah, I don't know what crystal ball or what DeLorean you jumped into to find out that information about Cuphead. Totally unexpected. I don't know if we'll ever see the full run of catalog cross accessibility, right? Like being able to see all of the Mario games on Xbox or any, you know, all of the Xbox games and or titles on the Nintendo Switch. I don't think it needs to be. I think they should have their own individual places where you can play them. But titles such as Cuphead, Ori, I think is a phenomenal opportunity as well. It's a game that lends itself really, really well to the Nintendo Switch as a platform. I think games like that do have an opportunity to succeed, and I'm for it. You know, anytime that we can get gamers to be able to enjoy a title that they may not have normally had access to, such as a game like Cuphead or possibly Ori or other titles such as that, I think that's a benefit to everybody, right? Because not everybody has the wherewithal or the financial ability to be able to afford a Nintendo Switch and or an Xbox One X and or a PS4. You know, some of us are privileged to be able to have that. And in that regard, you know, yes, I can, but you know, little Johnny down the block, and apologies, little Johnny, for bringing you, you know, digging you up out Johnny's of the grave. Like,
little Johnny's like, why are you always mentioning me?
Let me live. But you know, little Johnny down the block may only have a Switch and had never experienced Cuphead, right? And then now now he has the opportunity to play it. He or she has the opportunity to play it.
Yeah, I mean, this is the beginning of like their relationship with Xbox and Nintendo. We're going to see more of that. It all started with Minecraft, of course. But I think in the future, we might see Nintendo being open of like having their characters maybe in like as a feature for like another game. We could see that. But like having an official Mario game available on a PlayStation 4 or an Xbox in the future, that's going to be kind of hard.
I don't think we'll ever see that personally. I just think right now Xbox needs it more than Nintendo, and I think that's why this is happening. You know, they're opening themselves up to be able to be more accessible, to bring more eyes and potentially consumers over to their ecosystem. I just still think in my heart of hearts that Nintendo needs it, right? Xbox is the one that needs the help right now because they're trying to grow out of that singular space that they're in right now. They're trying to branch out. Kudos to them for thinking outside the box in that perspective. But yeah, I don't think Nintendo doesn't really need the help right now.
I know you say that they don't need it, but I know in a lot of interviews, different developers or the execs from Nintendo have been saying that they will love to try new things, to have like their properties in different platforms or in different places where they could start promoting the product and the company even more. For example, you know, having the theme park, Universal Studios, that's one. Having now mobile games like iOS and Android, that's another big, huge step from Nintendo. Don't be surprised if the company starts doing stuff like that I was saying right now, not only on Xbox, but other consoles too, or even PC. You never know. Because I think Nintendo nowadays, they would like to open up and try new things at the same time. Promote the company and promote what they have available now, which is Nintendo Switch. So I can see that. I can see that in the future. So, all right. So let's play another voicemail, Pete.
Okay.
All right. Voicemail number two.
Go.
What's up, boys? This is Jeff from the DF Dub down in Texas. So let me preface this question real quick and just say that it's not super relevant with any current events going on in the industry or nothing like that. I've just been dying to get your guys' opinion on Half-Life 3, right? So, I mean, you guys could go on. We could have a conversation for hours. Everything in and around Half-Life 3. So I'm going to keep it simple. Are you guys okay living in a world where Half-Life 3 never comes out? I mean, I think I am. I mean, I know it's a disservice seeming, but like I said, I mean, there's more than a few good reasons as to why, you know, people have theorized it hasn't come out or they're working on it, but slowly and so on and so forth. But let me rephrase it. What about like The Division? Let's just say The Division 2, the ending of that game is a cliffhanger and it's awesome and everybody loves it, but then they never come out with a Division 3. Is that acceptable, you guys think, for a game studio ever? Is there any kind of like pass that they should get for having dropped some blockbuster games like the previous two? Or, you know, I guess I'm just curious as to your guys' opinion about a game studio, you know, never really finishing their line of, you know, video games, lack of a better word. So that's all I want to know. Just wanted to get you guys' opinion on the whole Half-Life 3 escapade. Before I go, one last thing. I wonder how Keon's been. I haven't heard from him on the podcast in a while. And nothing beats that fan mail section when you hear Keon come on with the, "What's up, everybody? Hope you fellas are..." Man, Keon is the man. I hope everything's all good. And you guys keep doing what you're doing. And I'll see you later.
All right. Thanks for calling and appreciate that. Yes, yeah. We are missing Keon.
Yeah, definitely.
What would happen if... I don't know. I guess that's a good question. I'd like to know what happened. I want to know where my Half-Life 3 is, honestly. And I think that's the question. I think right now at this point, though, I think Half-Life 3 is the pipe dream. That's the carrot that we'll never get. Mm-hmm. I just don't know if Valve is in that thought process anymore.
But let me ask you this, Pete. Do you prefer... For the company to release Half-Life 3 and it's not even all that, or just leave it out as, don't release the game at all?
If you're not, all right, so Half-Life 2 has this legendary unicorn status at this point, right? It's kind of, all right, so, you know, and I'll answer it and then I'm going to throw it right back at you. And I think you already know where I'm going to go with this, right? The way that it ended left it in similar to the vein of like The Sopranos, the way that that series ended, right? It's like, well, what happened? You know, the screen turns to black, obviously in Half-Life 2. And I think I've gone beyond the spoiler limit on this one. We can talk about the ending of Half-Life 2, right? You got G-Man standing up there and he just, you know, he comes out and then he walks off stage to the right and the screen turns black and that's the end of Half-Life 2. Makes you wonder what happened. Let's go to 2019. Shenmue 3 is coming out. You know that. You know exactly what I'm going to say. You know, yeah. Shenmue 3 comes out and it poops the bed, right? It's trash. Would you have rather played a watered down trash ending, or would you have rather lived on to the nostalgia of the way Shenmue 2 was and the way that that whole series wrapped up? The way, even as open-ended as it may have been, but having that nostalgia of such a great, you know, game 1 and 2, and then now it happens and it doesn't have the same impact to you personally. Are you okay with that? That's basically what the caller just said.
Yeah, it's like I know I'm excited for Shenmue 3, but at the same time, I feel like I just want to close that chapter because I just love the story. But at the same time, I'm afraid that Shenmue 3 is going to come out. The reviews is not going to be great because maybe the game still feels like the old way. Like, for example, Crackdown. Like Crackdown, the latest Crackdown. I like the game. The media, a lot of them were just giving like bad reviews. So I think it's still probably going to feel like the old way, but with a new look, but the same type of style of gameplay, you know? So I don't know. I'm in the middle, P, because at the same time, like, I just want to end it, but I get it. Like, I don't want a product to be released and then it's kind of crappy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right. What I'm saying? Well, it's the, but you have
nostalgia
to,
of it.
Yes, but at the same time, it's good to take that risk because what if it's a game of the year contender, something that you're going to love, or you know what I'm saying? Like you never know until you try it. So
let me ask you this. How confident are you? And let's be brutally honest right now. How confident are you that Shenmue 3 is going to live up to the expectations, not just of others, but of yourself, of having Shenmue on that pedestal for so many years, and now it comes out? What in your heart of hearts do you think is Shenmue 3 going to be?
I think it's going to be good. I think it's going to be good. Seeing, because the developer's been emailing everybody that donated to Kickstarter. So we always be getting updates. Plus, I follow people that worked on voice actors that worked on Shenmue in the past, and they're very excited. They've been also recording in the studio. They have the script, and I believe some of them already finished already the whole recording. But they're excited. So if they're excited, also the developer excited, it gets me excited. So I'm pretty up there. Like, now is it going to be like game of the year type thing? I don't know.
And are you okay with that? Are you okay with mediocrity? Are you okay with mediocrity if it comes out and it's okay?
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Really?
Because if it's a game that I like and I don't care what the media says, like I'm loving it and it complete the story, I'm fine with that, man. I'm fine with that. A games doesn't have to be tens and nines for you to enjoy it. There's games that you probably enjoy, Pete, that it's like, if you go to Metacritic, review scores is trash, right? But you enjoy that game, right? I don't mind about that. I don't mind. Now, if it's something that I'm loving it and it's fine, yo, it's good. Like I don't know what's so wrong about that. You know, I donated.
I'm curious if maybe because you donated, you're a Kickstarter for this project, if maybe you just have more investment than if it was just a regular title off the shelf.
That's part of it, and part of it because that's part of it. But part of it too is because I'm just a huge fan of Shenmue. Like I just love that game. Like I played it so many times on Sega Dreamcast, on the original.
How many
Xbox
years
One.
Ago was that?
Over
10 years ago, 10, 12
over,
years ago?
Over 10 years ago. But I also got the HD version that just released for the Xbox One and PlayStation 4. I got it. I played it again. I finished one. Two, I haven't completed it yet, the HD version, because you know I've been playing other games, but I'm excited. Like I'm super, super excited about the game. But like with you, Pete, are you okay if Valve never release Half-Life 3?
At this point, I think I am, because I don't want them to bring out, I don't want them to trot out the old horse. And then it just can't, it doesn't perform, right? If it doesn't succeed in the same way or level that Half-Life 2 did, you know, Half-Life 2 being a critical success, you know, it's the unicorn, right? I don't want them to trot out this crappy, Half-Life 3 that doesn't live up to the expectations. It's kind of like the way Marino went out. You know, he did great as a quarterback, was never able to bring it home. And, you know, the last couple of years, he should not have been playing, right? He just didn't have the talent around him. He couldn't run, et cetera. And apologies for those for me bringing out a sports analogy on here, but go out on top. You know, fine, leave it open-ended. I'm happier with that as opposed to them bringing out a substandard trilogy ender that doesn't live up to its expectations. And then now you've got, that's the last thing that you remember Half-Life as a franchise being. You know, I'd much rather live with the memories of what Half-Life 2 was and how it impacted the industry in general than have them bring out Half-Life 3, it being a flop, you know, in every way, shape, or form, and the expectations get, you know, thrown into the dumpster, and that is the last memory we have. It's kind of like Marvel on Netflix. Like, I don't want Jessica Jones season 3 to be the last thing. And if it's garbage, that's the last memory I have of Marvel on Netflix, right? I would have much rather it been, whether it be The Punisher or like Daredevil's last season, be my last memory of that whole universe. But no, now I have to trudge through Jessica Jones season 3. That's how I put it.
All right, so here's another one, another email here. This is from Ian. He says, hi, guys. Since your conversation on your private demo of Generation Zero at E3 last year, I haven't heard any more about the game. Do you think there will be more at this year's E3? Thanks for all your content. Loving daily conversations. Thank you, Ian, for the email, and thank you for listening to GTR. I think we're probably going to see more about the game later this year, and hopefully based on that presentation the company will release that game maybe the end of the year or something like that. So maybe Winter of Arcade, Summer of Arcade, if Xbox plans to do that. So I think that's one the time frame where they're going to release it, between summer or during the holidays.
Generation Zero,
yeah, I think
it's coming next week, March 26th.
It is?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
I didn't even know. I haven't heard anything about the game. Wow. Major fail, ladies and gentlemen. There you go.
Very major fail. Way to go, major Danny.
Wait, really?
It's coming out. AMD's driver package just came out last week, and it updated GPUs for that. So this was like 3 days ago. Yeah, and it
major fail. Because
the new driver package... The driver package that came out was to prepare GPUs for Sekiro, which I know you just got.
Generation Zero. Wait, Generation Zero is the game I'm talking about, Pete.
I know. Generation Zero comes out March 26th.
For Xbox and PlayStation? Or just Xbox?
If they're dropping a driver, I can't tell you if it's going to be for a console. But yeah, Generation Zero comes out in 3 days, according
to PC Gamer. Wow, I have no idea. Wow, this is major fail. Well, all right, next question.
So, I'm sorry. Clip that. I just did.
That was major fail.
It comes out March 26, 2019 on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and Microsoft Windows. So, yeah.
Wow. All right, well, go to the next question. I'm not leaving the podcast. I really don't care. I'm leaving the podcast. go for it. What's you have a voicemail we should play? Yes. I had no idea. I swear to God, I had no idea it was coming out next week.
All right, here we go.
All right.
Hi guys, it's Devin here. Stadia. So psyched for this thing. Just everything, it looks so cool. I agree with what Paris said on the conversation that Danny and Paris had. Honestly, I think some of these hangups are temporary. Infrastructure is starting to catch up. And the one thing that encouraged me is the controller connects directly to the service. So you don't have that thing sitting in the middle causing lag. So I think if you're going to reduce that input lag, that is one way to do it. And I think they're doing it the right way. But if you put aside the pricing and the streaming technology and all that for 1 second, the one thing that really excites me, which nobody's really talking about right now, is Google has said this is kind of the spec that you're going to get with Stadia, which gives you your 10.7 teraflops, so many gigs of RAM, so much, you know, in terms of processing power, etc. But what I'm thinking is there is nothing to stop Google at some point in a private discussion with a company like Epic or Rockstar or Ubisoft to say, hey, we've got something really big coming out. We want to make this massive open world game with so many players and all this detail and all this stuff, and we want you to up the spec for our game. I'm not saying that they would do this a lot, but there's nothing to stop them, right? Because it's all in the cloud. They can make any spec they want. And there's nothing to stop them from saying, okay, you know, instead of 16 gigs of RAM, we're going to make it 32. Instead of 10.7 teraflops, now we're going to crank out 19. So suddenly you have this partnership with a game developer where they want to make this amazing game. And it doesn't matter if it's 1 year, 2 year, 3 years down the track. If Google's up for it and developers up for it, they do it, and they can do it just for that game. Maybe I'm talking, poo, I don't know. but I can't see any reason why they wouldn't be able to do this with cloud computing. And to me, that means that you don't have the limitations of the typical console cycle anymore. Those consoles go out, they're fixed spec. Developers have to work with them, and they have to make sure that all their games work for so many years. cloud computing, that can evolve and change it with every single game at any time. It doesn't have to be, for a certain set period of time for every single game. You might have some games that don't need that kind of spec. They can run on, 8 gigs of RAM and maybe 5 teraflops because they're indie games or something like that. And then you'll have games that will run on, 20 teraflops. So I see a lot of opportunity with that. And I'm really interested to see where it's going to take gaming and just unleashing the restrictions that developers currently have with the console generations. That's my opinion. Love to know your thoughts about it.
All right, Danny. Thoughts on Stadia? I know you guys dropped that 1 hour discussion you and Paris earlier in the week.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My biggest concern with regards to Stadia is probably the biggest one that everybody always talks about, right? Google's classic history of abandoning products, right? We've seen it. The Nexus Player, which I was all on board about, and then that disappeared. That never happened. Google Plus, Google Wave, Health, Reader, The Glass, which you had for a little bit.
I forgot about that. Wow. Yeah.
Orku, Allo, which was supposed to be their new messaging platform. It went dead last month. Google Fiber. We thought that was going to be the next thing. And that project as a whole got halted, And Google Hangouts, the one application that you, me, you, Paris, and Mandy and David and et cetera, we use those daily. I use it all the time with my wife, for quick communication. How important is that to this? If it doesn't succeed in the way or shape that Google envisions, now we've got a dead piece of hardware like our Ouyas, now we've just got a hard piece. We've got a piece of hardware that just disappears. So on top, not to say that the tech isn't amazing. That's some pretty impressive tech to be able to go from playing it on your Chromebook, switching to your phone, and it picks up where you left off, to moving to your tablet, to moving to another piece of hardware and being able to play it on your TV all seamlessly without losing your place in the game. Using the power of Google Cloud, who probably, if anybody, has the infrastructure to make this work right the first time, right? We saw how well it worked on Project Stream, but does America in and of itself, and I say, and I'm focusing on America because I don't live anywhere else. I can't speak to infrastructures elsewhere. I know like in places like in Europe where you don't have bottle cap data caps. You've got much better infrastructure to be able to support streaming games like this, or in Japan where they've got better internet service than we do here in the United States. How do we support it? Not that many people have the infrastructure here in the United States to be able to support that from a network perspective. And then on top of that, you've got Google's history of abandoning products that don't fit its, its scheme at that point in time. I have a feel. I'm afraid that people are going to invest money in a product like Stadia, and then it just disappears.
So my question to you, Pete, have you listened to the latest Daily Conversation episode?
857. That was the one you in Paris.
Yeah. Have you heard?
Yes. I've heard. I listened to most of it.
Most of it. Okay.
Yes.
So I think that this is going to be a subscription service. It's not going to be like on live, where you go and purchase the game from the that's what I think. Paris says that.
Yeah, he thinks that it was going to be a free service, and then just advertising or whatever is going to be able to support that money on the back end.
Yeah. That's what I think. So, if it's a subscription service, then you're not really paying much. You're just paying for that moment. And once, let's say you pay for like 3 months. Let's just say. Once you're done after the 3 months and let's say the company shuts down, then it's just down. Like, that's fine. The problem that I have is if you buy a game that's $60 and you have the streaming service and let's say it doesn't work out, it just shuts down. What happened with the game? You're screwed. Like, you pay the $60, then it's completely gone after it shuts down. That would be messed up if that happens. That would be really messed up.
Well, I mean, regardless, I think it's going to be, I think it's a crapshoot right now because they don't, they're hinging a lot of money and,
Paris, I said there was a subscription service, not you. I said,
I know Paris, he did say that. I know Paris is in the chat right now saying he didn't say it was a subscription. No, we know you said, you know, I actually, that's right near the part where I had to stop listening to it right before we came on live today. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that's going to be something that they've got a lot of money, tech, and infrastructure hinging on the success of this. Standing up something like Stadia does not come cheap, right? I don't, you know, people go into business to be able to make money on the back end or on the future of it. I think subscriptions is one way to offset the cost of that. But again, they have that history of things that they throw money at and don't succeed, but with so much, if you know, with so much money being made on the other on other products, whether it be Google, you know, whether it be their music or what is it, their Google Drive services, their mm-hmm. enterprise services, obviously YouTube, Google searches and ads, they make so much money that they could offset those losses. I don't know. I'm hesitant. I like the way they're I like where they're going, but I'm afraid that this may not succeed to the expectations that they're thinking, and it's gonna fall flat.
It's gonna be interesting. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. It's gonna be interesting, dude. What's gonna happen? Cause I all I know is that it's good that Google's doing this. Because the pressure's on with Microsoft. That's what I know. They're gonna go all out, I think, during E3. So, but yeah, if you listen to this episode right now and you're curious about a conversation I had with Paris, go to gamertagger.com, listen to the previous episode of Daily Conversations, and yeah, it's there. It's like almost an hour.
Yeah, my whole thing with that is. It's a service, right? You don't have to, it's not a console based service, so people are not spending money on that like they normally would. Mm-hmm. But that level of entry still requires you buying something, right? You still have to have a phone or a Pixel tablet to be able to use that service. You still need a Chromebook, or you know, whether it be an IBM Yoga or you know a Surface or anything else. You still need a computer or some kind of a device to access that service. So it's not like it's a totally free service, right? You're still going to need to get into it at some way, shape, or form. I still think I have a feeling that if they're going to do the Stadia service, it's going to be some form of a subscription based type service, similar to like Game Pass right now for Microsoft or Xbox Live for Microsoft. Okay.
All right. Let's play the next. We still have voicemails? Yeah, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I kind of slipped by letting the first 2 seconds play. I wasn't paying attention. Okay. Here we go.
All right.
Hey, what's going on, Gamer Tag Radio? Man, it has been a minute, but I hope you brothers are doing great. This is Keon calling from Baltimore. I haven't called in, guys, because, quite honestly, and this is not to get down. I don't want you to get down for me. Don't feel sorry for me. But I was actually sick for a little bit. I had this thing called radial nerve palsy. And basically what it was my left hand was completely incapacitated. I had no feeling in it or anything. I couldn't game or anything. But thank God I was able to make a 100% recovery with physical therapy and all of that stuff. So everything is fine. But when that happened and I couldn't game for a bit of time, it really got me to thinking, gee whiz, what else would I do? What else would I be as passionate about or love doing as a hobby more than gaming? And, you know, I mean, I thought about the Xbox controller. That is a great controller option. Thank goodness I didn't need it. Like I said, I was able to fully recover. But my question to you guys is, do you have any other hobbies? Because I know you guys are very passionate. Y'all get into great debates with one another, and it makes for a fantastic podcast. But do you guys have any other hobbies you're just as passionate about if gaming was no longer an option. Just wanted to get you guys' opinion on that. Oh, man, you guys have been doing amazing work. Danny going to the division event in D.C. But anyway, I'm getting long-winded as usual. But with that being said, you guys take care and have a good one. Bye-bye.
As always, shout out.
Yeah.
Good friend Keon, man. Shout out to Keon.
Shout out to him. Actually, when I was in Washington, D.C., he hit me up and we were supposed to meet up. But
that'd have been amazing.
Yeah, it just got crazy with scheduling. Like the whole schedule for the whole week was,
right.
was tough. And so we never made it happen. But shout out to Keon. Glad that he's, calling us now. You know, it's been a while. So that's good. Shout out to him, man. Thank you for the support, sure. man. So, other hobbies, man. I used to be involved with, like, the hip hop scene, and he already knows about this, but, I used to be really, really involved back then. I will go to like a lot of events, discover like a lot of new artists, promotion. I used to do that too. And I used to work for a lot of music labels back then. So, that was my hobby. That was like my thing back then before GTR, before internet radio. That was my thing. And also I had a chance to interview a lot of music artists like Outkast, Cannabis, Wu-Tang Clan, KRS-One. Who else, man? I used to work for DJ Khaled back in the days. That's what I used to do. Also now I'm into like the whole political podcasts. Like I listen to that a lot. When I'm hanging out chilling, I love watching documentaries like on Netflix or Amazon Prime. I do that a lot. So those are my three hobbies right now. If gaming wasn't around, I would have been probably doing those. And also still speaking about podcasts. For sure. You, Pete?
For me, aside from going to the gym, I have this fascination with the guitar. You know, I have three guitars right now in my room. I've got an Ovation acoustic, I've got a Jackson Dinky, and I've got a Les Paul, a custom Les Paul. It's a 7-string Les Paul. It's the Trivium. Trivium is a metal band from Orlando. Their lead guitarist and singer, Matt Hafey, who's actually a streamer on Twitch. He's got a really cool live stream. He's got a custom 7-string model with EMG pickups, and it's all white. I think you may have seen it if you watch me. If you've seen my social media, whether it be IG or Twitter, you've seen pictures of it there. But yeah, that's my thing. You know, playing guitar, whether it be heavy metal, progressive rock, classic rock, stuff like that. That's if I wasn't playing video games. That's what I was doing straight out of high school. You know, got accepted into Berklee College of Music and stuff like that. So music has always been a big thing for me. Similar to you, as a former DJ and stuff like that, playing, you know, dance music and hip hop and stuff like that. So if I didn't have video games, I'd probably still be doing that or, you know, doing that more so.
Yeah. And I remember we used to do like mixtapes on GTR.
Oh, yeah.
We did a lot. Yeah. You remember that?
Yeah, remember episode 300? Like it was such a big deal that we got to episode 300. I did like some hip hop mix and we released it on the show or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's when we used to play music.
Yeah, back in the days. Used to play music on the stream.
Yeah, definitely. Anything else, Pete? Any other voicemails? Or I think we're done, right, with the voicemails?
Yeah, I think that's...
Or emails.
Yeah.
Discord? We have anything with Discord?
We may. I think we do.
And yes, Generation Zero comes out next week.
Yes, you weren't aware. If you didn't know, it comes out on the 26th.
On the 26th.
Two days ago. Two days from now.
Wow.
Okay, so Phoenix, shout out to Phoenix from the Discord server. Hey, Danny, Pete, and Paris, I've been listening to GTR for roughly 10 or 11 years so far, and I still look forward to listening to each and every episode. It's so cool to see how far you've progressed the quality and professionalism of the show. Keep up the great work. I was wondering if you would consider including discussion or having a segment where you talk about some of the games out there that are not as popular or getting as much shine as the current big dogs in the industry. I'm talking about games that are actually good, that just aren't getting the attention that some of the other games are getting and maybe worth trying out. Just thought I'd throw that idea out there. Thanks for the read and shout out to all of the GTR Discord fam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'm the the one that plays the most like underground indie games, because I have more time. I'm not working, so I have time to do that. You know, it's mm-hmm. kind of hard, you know, in a situation with like P in Paris, like, you know, they're working and it's kind of hard. And I love discovering new games. You know, there was a time that I was just discovering a lot of games when I just first started using Steam Machine, games that I've never heard before at that time, like Layers of Fear was available there first and then came out for Xbox One and PlayStation 4. Now I heard that part 2 is coming out. I'm excited. I definitely want to check that out. So I'm probably gonna do more of that. There's a couple of games that I have on the Switch that is not mainstream at all. Probably gonna talk about it in the future episode with Mandy or my brother. I'm working on it. Gotta give us some time. And yeah, that's about it. But I definitely would like to focus on those games, because look, we all know about The Division and Anthem and all these big mainstream AAA games, right? But there's a lot of hidden gems that people are just never heard about it. For example, like me, I didn't know that Generation Zero was coming out in a couple of days. I had no idea, because the advertisement is not everywhere, man. Like, you know, and it's hard to keep up, man. Especially nowadays, there's so many games that comes out all the time. Look, there's games that comes out on the Switch multiple times a week, and I can't keep up. So what I do is either I go on YouTube to see, because I have a lot of like Nintendo Switch channels, like fans creating content about like games coming out or stuff like that, or I'll go to the store and I'll see what's the latest games that comes out. So if there's a game that gets my attention, I'll just search it online to see if there's like a trailer, or sometimes there's trailers there part of the page in the store. So what about you, Pete? You do that too? Or
obviously I don't play as much. I'm kind of like stuck in the titles or the genres that I play. So every once in a while, there'll be a random game that pops up that kind of catches my fancy. Mm-hmm. One that I've had my eye on over the last 2 or 3 weeks, it got a lot of fanfare at last E3, but when it released last month, the response or the reviews have been kind of mixed or, you know, middle of the road. But I'm still very, very curious. Is Jump Force, right? I really, really want to check out that game, because that game, aside from having, you know, the Dragon Ball Z characters and Bleach and Naruto and One Piece, you know, Hunter x Hunter, Fist of the North Star, you know, Yu Yu Hakusho, things like that. Those are animes that not just myself, but my kids, you know, latched onto very young, especially like Yu-Gi-Oh. You know, being able to play as Yu-Gi-Oh versus Seto Kaiba, me and my son, those were cartoons that him and I, you know, basically grew up on, you know, him being a very small child and me being a young adult. And so, you know, I would love to have, you know, to bring that, you know, and I may just grab that just so, and my wife saw me watching a stream last night of a championship on Jump Force. And she was like, I want to play that, you know, and her and I have history of always, you know, playing shooter, you know, or fighting games and me getting my ass kicked. So like, I kind of want to do that, to have that enjoyment and have that, spend that time with my wife, but I don't, cause I don't want to lose. Right. Yeah. But yeah, and there's always games out there that periodically come out that'll grab your fancy. They are Billions, which came out last year. You know, games like that, you know, that don't get the acclaim or get the popularity that maybe other, that they get outshadowed, right? Because of the other AAA big franchise titles. But yeah, not to say that they aren't out there. It's just a matter of finding those little gems and then playing them and then giving them the shine that they deserve.
Yep. All right. So we're going to go now with the interview that Paris recorded a couple of days ago with Massive about the Division 2, the AI of the Division 2. Yo, the conversation was really great. Really, really good. So I'm going to play right now. And once we come back, we're going to give shout outs to everybody that have been donating for the past few days to support GTR for us to go to E3. So we'll be right back after this.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
Everybody, this is Paris, and I have a very special treat right now. You guys know how much I have been talking and playing The Division 2, and I absolutely love this game right now. And I had a scenario that happened to me in the first week with the AI, and I was like, you know what? I got to contact Stone and see if I can get someone to talk about the AI in The Division 2, and that is exactly what I've done. So can you guys please introduce yourselves?
Yeah, I'm Phil Lunston. I am lead AI programmer on The Division 2.
And I'm Drew Reckner. I'm lead AI designer on Division 2.
Thank you guys so much for taking a few minutes to talk to me. So I want to set up this scenario really quick, which prompted this whole thing. So I'm playing The Division 2 with one of my buddies. It's actually early in the game. I mean, I think we're probably like level 10 or something like that. I think it was even a side mission that we were doing. We go into this building, and I'm pretty sure it was a three-story building, and like inside the courtyard. And the AI is pretty sure it was a hyenas. They're shooting down at us from the top floor. We're at the bottom floor, and we're kind of in this one spot, and we're not moving, and we're shooting up and taking out enemies. All of a sudden, we get flanked from behind, and we're like, where did this dude come from? What is going on? And then we realize, as we then went through the back hallways, we actually could traverse all the way up to the top where the AI was, and it was one of the guys at the top came all the way down and started shooting at us from behind. And I go, wow, this AI in The Division 2 is fantastic. So why I wanted to get you guys on is I know we have the various factions in the game, and even the civilians are a faction of themselves. So can you kind of talk about how the AI, first let's talk about this. How did you come up with this AI in the game for The Division 2? Is this just a natural progression from the first game, or did you literally start from scratch to create this in this world?
Yeah. So basically, when we released The Division 1, we were busy doing post-launch things, but we had kind of enough time had passed that we thought it was a really good idea to kind of take the team, talk about, hey, like, let's reflect on our AI, right? Let's do a retrospective, and let's talk about the things that we really liked that we did, the things that we did that we think we really need to improve on, and then, you know, talk about more future things, things we wanted to add. And, you know, kind of throughout that process, we kind of identified some of the kind of weaknesses that we thought we had, and kind of we developed a plan to try to improve on that. And the nice part about, you know, working on a game like The Division is that we had post-launch that we could, like, kind of try out some of those things. So if you played survival at all, you played against the Hunter AI.
Right.
You know, you'll see actually that's where we started applying a lot of those learnings from, you know, the vanilla Division 1. That's where we started experimenting a lot with, okay, like, can we improve the tactics and decision making of the AI when they become aggressive, when they decide to kind of retreat and be a bit more offensive, when they decide to kind of flank and, you know, all of those kind of things. Like, how we really challenge the player in those kind of micro like shooter skills kind of way, and then we kind of like we tried to build on that, right, with legendary mode and things like that. We also tried some experimentation, so we had all these learnings, and we used that really as the baseline for Division 2. So we kind of took that, all those learnings, all that work we did, and then we started with that, and then we kind of added some things, pared down some things, because obviously we can't have just all hunters running around.
Right.
But yeah, that's kind of how that worked.
Okay. And that's kind of the thing, because I notice every time we engage in a fight, it seems to be very dynamic and unique. No fight is exactly the same. And then when you kind of break it down per faction, I see that the hyenas are going to fight differently than the True Sons are going to fight. And then, you know, the Black Tusks, obviously, they're going to have their own unique fighting style as well. So how do you handle that in a living world? Not to mention that each player we have basically our own instance of the world. So when you look at the Division II as this living, breathing online world that so many people are connecting to, how are you guys handling this? Because obviously all the NPC characters are not just running on a specific script. They're reacting to what's happening in the world, whether it's me, the player, actually doing it, or if they're actually engaged with another faction and they're having a war with a fight with you, absolutely doing nothing but observing it.
Yeah. yeah, I mean, that's one of the things we really wanted to focus on in the Division 2 was, yeah, having, unlocking more of the systemic behaviors that we had in the AI that we didn't really get to sort of express in the Division 1. And, yeah, as you said, having NPCs in the open world where players are moving around, you know, we can't script how the AI is going to react in a given situation. We don't know where players are going to come from. We don't know, you know, how, you know, especially with co-op, we don't know if they're together or apart. And so it's, yeah, it's about trying to build systems that, you know, where the sort of unlock the behaviors as the players interact with them. So, you know, combining sort of simple systems that you combine together to create sort of, you know, complex, you know, behaviors for the NPCs. I mean, speaking towards the faction traits, I mean, that's the factions. That's what, you know, you mentioned having how the factions behave differently. They, some are trained, some are untrained,
yeah,
and that,
yeah,
you know, that personality comes out in the way they, how aggressive they are towards you or the type of equipment they have.
You know, yeah. And we like to speak a little bit more on that. Like,
sure.
You know, this time around, we really thought of our factions as, like, we really wanted to diversify them as much as possible. And so we kind of created these things that we call faction traits, that we used to define them. And they're basically, you know, they're four different kind of major traits that each faction has. So faction level, a training level, an organization level, and a tech level. And so, like, all the different factions have, like, you know, some different permutation of those. So, you know, you look at the True Sons, they're organized, they're defensive, they're trained, and they have kind of medium tech. And then you look at someone like the Hyenas, who are disorganized, they're untrained, but we kind of offset that, those things with the fact that they have access to kind of high tech. And so, like, each faction kind of has their own, like, say, DNA, so to speak. So that's kind of what we use to really try to push them apart as much as possible.
Yeah, and a lot of the cool interactions happen when you take sort of combinations of, you know, different NPC types with different, you know, different factions, and you put them into a slightly different environment. The, you know, they will play out differently. So that's, you know, we get that emergent sort of, you know, experience that, you know, is so much fun to,
yeah,
to play with.
Well, and that brings me to another thing, the deck of 52, the world bosses that are around the world. I know there was one of the state of the games where one of the developers talked about a scenario he had before the game launched where Black Tusk called for backup, and then it turned out to be one of the world bosses that actually answered the call. And just the other day, I had something similar happen where I'm engaged in a firefight with just some roaming True Sons. They called for something. Next thing I know, I'm like, who are these yellow bars coming? Sure enough, one of them was one of the world bosses answering the call. So again, when I talk about that live world and you see interactions where, you know, you have the routes that are set up, you know, between the control points where they're sending resources, and then you see the civilians and the NPCs interacting. And then, like I said, I throw in that unknown dynamic of myself into it, but then the world is reacting naturally, even if I wasn't involved, where it's bringing in these other characters to interact. So again, I feel like I keep gushing about this AI because, you know, I've played other games in the genre, I've played other things, but I've noticed specifically with the Division 2 where, like you just mentioned, you have your untrained factions, trained, etc., where they're always doing something different that I'm not expecting. And just the aggression you might see of the Black Tusks, or, you know, just the various call-outs you see. I remember, I call them the Black Mirrors, you know, the robot dogs or whatever, right? And all of a sudden, I see a medic healing one of them, and we're screaming on the mic, oh my God, he's healing them, what is going on here? You know, that kind of thing. So I see all these little things going in there. And like I said at the beginning, I'm just so very impressed with all that going on that you've been able to just manage all that happening in the world at any one time. So again, just kudos to all that that's happening. But I guess going to ask an actual question, like I said, with the deck of 52 world bosses, how does that work in the world too? Again, is that just a dynamic thing that you have set in there, or is there anything scripted going on that would have them come over to you when you're engaged in a fight?
Yeah. So, I mean, like there's a little bit of, kind of trickery that we use, obviously.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's intended to be dynamic, right? Like it's supposed to feel that way. It's supposed to be kind of unpredictable, and you should get those kind of surprise wow moments, right? That was something that we felt like we didn't have a lot of in Division One, and it was something that we like really wanted to push for in Division Two as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And so it's really cool hearing your experience. I mean, that's exactly what we're going for.
Part of the design for the Division Two is we wanted to make, you know, to unlock that type of encounter in the open world by, you know, we wanted through the settlements and the settlement needs and the pushing, you know, civilians out to get resources while other, you know, other outposts and strongholds are pushing their NPCs out of the True Sons are trying going out to patrolling an area. You know, we're deliberately, you know, having those groups sort of, you know, overlap and intersect, and, you know, hoping that the player will be in that, in different places, and will sort of, you know, sometimes you'll run into one group and you're, you know, that will be the only group you'll see, and then, but other times, you know, they collide and you end up with that cool experience. And sometimes that happens in a location where there is a you know, deck of 52 boss, and you, right. You know, during exactly. That encounter you'll unlock that as well type thing, and yeah.
Oh, that is just fantastic. It really is. And again, I don't want to take up too much of your time. So kind of my final thing with this, just speaking AI wise, is kind of the future. I assume it's only been a week, but has there been any type of feedback that you've already gotten for things that you potentially could try and implement into the game down the road AI wise?
There's obviously like a lot of feedback and we're, you know, constantly kind of going through all of that. There's all sorts of good suggestions and ideas. I don't know if I can probably speak specifically to exactly what we have planned, unfortunately, but like there are a lot of things that have been mentioned that we are taking very seriously and are absolutely like looking into. It kind of sucks.
Yeah, I get it.
That's a great answer, Drew. That's a very PR-friendly answer. Yeah, right. I highly approve of that answer.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, I know there's some things that you obviously can't talk about on the record. I guess I was just more curious, just feedback wise. Has there been anything that you guys have seen? Like I've given my personal experience, but is there any feedback that you've gotten that surprised you? Just from the community as a whole, having had the game now for, like I said, it's only really been a week, but anything surprising that the AI has done out there naturally in the world that you guys just simply haven't seen, you know, while you were building the game and playtesting it?
I think, like for me, I think, I don't know if it's necessarily been surprising necessarily, but it's been really cool to see people noticing the small details. Because, we try to like load in these small details and we hope that someone will notice. But, you know, ultimately it's like, well, if people don't notice that you destroy the True Sun medic's shock pads, he can't revive an ally and he doesn't use it to shock you when you get close. Like, if people don't realize that, that's okay. But it's super cool that people have realized that, and you know, they hit that on his back as the first thing they do when they reach an encounter.
Yeah, there's a lot of very subtle sort of tech changes we made as well. Just to improve like the way the NPCs talk and the way
yeah.
The environment that. Yeah, I mean, they're sort of fairly minor on the face of it. They look like minor changes, and we've been really, like, it's really gratifying to see players say, you know, see that type of thing and notice it. And yeah, I mean, for us, there's stuff that we thought would have a sort of an impact, but it's not until you actually see people play it. The people that don't know it's their type thing and they suddenly see it. And you know, yeah, it's amazing to watch people play it.
Well, again, I think the biggest compliment that I can give the AI in, that I've seen so far in the game is just the simple fact that be it a side mission, be it a main mission, stronghold, you know, just randomly out in the world exploring, which has been probably one of my favorite parts of the game, is just not even doing anything specific, just engaging into the world. That anytime we get into an encounter and into a fight with one of the factions, the number one lesson that I've learned is don't stay in one spot, because the AI is very smart with pushing you, surrounding you, getting behind you, throwing grenades on you, just everything under the sun that they potentially could do, they will do. And, and it keeps you on your toes. And as you know, as a player of the game, it's not like, well, I know if I sit and cover in this one spot, I can just pick them off one by one and I'll be good. That does not happen in this game, no matter what level you're playing at, no matter if it's an in-game activity, whatever the case may be. The AI is definitely looking at your tactics and reacting to it. And again, kudos to you, the entire team over there at Massive and at Ubisoft for creating this world and this game, because so far it's been fantastic. And again, guys, thank you for taking the time to talk to me. Like I said, I know this was last minute. I believe you guys are at GDC right now as well.
Yeah.
So wish I could have been there for that, but you know, again, just fantastic having a chance to talk to you about this game, and I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks. It's been great.
Yeah, I'm looking forward myself to getting back home so I can actually play the live game. We're so busy with the release last week and then GDC this week that we've been watching Twitch and watching Reddit, looking forward to just getting back and actually playing myself with some friends.
Oh yeah, it's been fantastic so far. Again, like I said, just thank you guys for taking the time out of your schedule to talk to me about this. I could talk about this all day, but obviously we're limited on time. But it's fantastic. AI is great in the game, and thank you again.
Yeah, thank you.
This is Gamertag Radio. Voicemail at 786-2737-GTR.
All right, so that was an interview with Paris. Shout out to Ubisoft and Massive for the interview. And hopefully by the end of this week, I probably will play an exclusive that we recorded that nobody have done that yet. So I'm going to surprise everybody. Hopefully for sometime this or next week. We'll see. I have to look. So, Pete, I think it's time. It's time for us to give shout-outs to everybody that have been donating for GTR. And remember, if you're listening to the podcast right now, all you have to do is go to donate.gamertagradio.com and support Gamertag Radio, because we're trying to go to E3. Even if it's a dollar, we appreciate any donations from the listeners, man. So shout out to everybody that have been helping us out. And Pete has comments and also how much we've been raised. Pete, give us the update, man, because you have all the details, man.
C. Whaley donated $10. Let me dream. Kataristas, big shout out to this to Kataristas. I believe he's from Norway. This person has been a staunch supporter of the Gamertag Radio show for years, especially once we hit Twitch. He's right now the current leader on the stream at $700 overall donated. He helped me get to TwitchCon last year. He's donated. Hello, guys. Love the work you've been putting in. Enjoy your content every week. Excited to see what comes out of E3 this year. Good luck and much love from Norway. So, Kataristas, thank you very much for always supporting us here at Gamertag Radio as a listener and or a viewer on Twitch.
Question. He donated how much recently?
$200.
$200. Okay. So, yeah. $700 overall from the beginning. Overall.
Yes.
So, he donated $200 the past few days.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Awesome. That's huge. AJ Mac 123 donated $100. Been here since 2006. Definitely want you guys to keep going forever. Hashtag let me dream. Gadget donated $20. You guys have entertained me for a few good years now through good and bad times. You do a fantastic job and work your socks off. So I'd like to thank you with a small donation and hope it helps out. Keep up the good work, guys. And thank you, Wayne.
Awesome.
Ryu Online donated £5. Keep up the great work. E3 without GTR isn't E3. Last year, you covered E3 the best with more content and episodes than any other podcast at Ryu Online. Thank you very much, Ryu.
Thank you.
Blicky donated $50. Thanks for so many years of great content. Listening to the podcast feels like talking with friends. It isn't much, but hope it helps. Thank you, Blicky, very much. Jay Baldino donated $100. Hoop Chi donated $5. Crackshot donated $10. Thanks for the content. And then just like right in the middle of the show today, Naughty Fox donated $20. Good luck at E3, gentlemen. Thank you very much to all of you for donating here on the podcast. I mean, it's the live stream. Mm-hmm. Every little bit helps. You didn't have to, but you did so with us. And for that, thank you very much.
So overall, Pete, how much we raised already so far?
I believe that brings us to... Oh, sorry. I forgot to mention Wingless 007. Mm-hmm. He donated as well. He donated $100.
Awesome.
Sorry, hold on. You guys are amazing, professional, and wonderful gamers. I love listening to all your podcasts and opinions, which I value a lot. You deserve to prosper in what you love and do so well. That means you need to go to E3 to tell all of us about it.
Oh, so, that's awesome. Wow. Yeah. Cool. So how much overall? Overall?
I think I totaled it up yesterday in our conversation. So I want to say it's like 655 or something like that.
Okay. That's good.
Or 656. I forget that. 611 since March 18th. So thanks to everyone.
Yeah. Thank you, everyone. We appreciate that. And for those who are listening right now, if this is your first time, you would love to donate, please go to donate.gamertagradio.com. That's donate.gamertagradio.com. We can't go to E3 without this money. I'm being totally like 100% real. I'm going to keep it 100 right now for the listeners because, you know, I don't have a job. And trips, it's not cheap, man. So whatever you can, even if it's a dollar, please donate and help us out, man. So once again, thank you so much for everybody that's been helping us out, man. So our goal is, what's the goal overall, Pete? Was it 4,300? Something like that, right? Because not only we're going to E3, we're also buying like equipment, like video equipment for us to start doing like a lot of video interviews too, because we want to put that like on Twitch and YouTube and stuff. So yeah. Anything else, Pete, before we wrap it up?
The total right now is at $641. Thank you so much. A lot of this will go to, you know, flights and or hotel fees over at E3, as well as to help us continue to improve the show from a back end technological perspective, whether it be equipment, microphones, headphones, etc. So thank you very much for all your help.
Definitely, man. Definitely. All right. So head over to gamertagradio.com, post your comments and feedback, listen to our past episodes. Also, you could go to any podcast app out there. Just search for Gamertag Radio. And once you search, subscribe, share with your friends, post a review if you can. It will help us out for other people to discover us. And just listen to our past content because we have a lot of cool stuff that we've been recording, especially this year alone. From January to now, we've been posting a lot of cool content, man. So, and that's it. We're going to wrap it up here. Anything else, Pete, before we go?
Yeah, there's one that I did forget. Chuck Sherrar, shout out to you. Thank you for the $20 donation as well. Thank you so much.
All right. Wow, it's a lot of people have been donating, man.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Long list. Keep it up.
It's huge. It's amazing.
Yeah, keep it up. Keep it up. I love the support that we've been getting from GTR, man. Not only in the United States, but worldwide, man. Getting a lot of support from everybody, man. So let's make history together. And let's make it happen, man, because I would love for us to go to E3 this year, man. I think it's going to be a very important year for gaming, and I think it would be good for us to be there to record that content and release it, record that content and release it to the public, man. So, and that's it. We're going to wrap it up here. Until next time, we're out.
Thanks
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.